Thank you for the introduction. I also want to thank my co-author, Dr. Leo Espinoza. Leo called me and said, Terry, you really need to submit something to the nutrient session. I said, okay, Leo. So here we are, rational lunch on the last day. Leo's already halfway home to Arkansas, and I just really appreciate Leo being here for me. Those of you who know Leo will appreciate that. This is something that I'm not a soil scientist, I'm an economist. And this has come out largely my dissertation. I did a lot of work in spatial statistics. But that being said, I do want to point out that I have passed the CCA exam. Although I'm not an agronomist, I am a CCA, and I'm proud of that. And how many of you are CCAs? Okay, there's five of us. That's a good group of soil scientists, huh? What is on-farm research? Well, the way I'll define it is farmer-managed field-scale trials. These are trials that are usually farmers interested in knowing an answer to something. But my experience is a lot of researchers are also using these for the same reasons. These trials usually in conjunction with researchers on at the university or USDA or so forth, and or they could just be on their own of the farmer. Categorical or rate trials, but the condition is that they are planned. They're not just data mining. A lot of times it's split planter, split field, or other designs. The reason I'm working on this is farmers have been telling me a few things. When they're trying to do strip trials or small plots or smaller plots, filling planter boxes with a small amount of seed is a pain, and then trying to clean the boxes between varieties or so forth. And when they're using bulk seed, it's difficult to fill planters. And the split planter trials are only convenient if the picker is exactly half the width of the planter. And I get this comment a lot, I put it in quotes. This isn't my statement, but this is the statement of farmers I talked to. A lot of them said that small plot trials are not realistic for their farms. I don't know if any of you hear that, or any of you hear that? Yeah, quite a bit. So I took these comments from farmers and decided to examine small plot research and why we do things the way we do, and examine the characteristics of field scale, large plot research, and why we do the things that we do, and see if we can develop some statistics to get comparably valid results from field scale experiments. So that's the way I view the world. So the criteria for on-farm trials when working with farmers, I'm trying to minimize time requirements at key times, namely planting and harvesting. And with harvesting, I'm a precision. All my research is in precision ag. Yield monitors really have given us a really good way of harvesting these experiments. I'm trying to minimize interference with the rest of the farming operation. And one of the key characteristics is that the farmer must be interested in the research question. They want to know the answer. What happens when the farmer is not interested in the result of an experiment? Just doesn't get done. So choosing experimental design, I've worked with farmers that have had many, pretty much anything you can think of, from split planter strip trials, such as this one. You can see the purple and red strips at the northern edge of this field. Most times this is categorical varieties or seed treatments. Some farmers use limited replication or no replication split field designs, such as this, with a red and a blue each being a variety in this case. I call this a split field design. The truth is farmers are conducting these experiments like this and they're hoping to get information to make decisions for next year. And I suspect a lot of researchers are doing demonstrations similar to this and trying to glean information as well. And a lot of the experiment types would be tillage, drainage, or aerial applied products that don't lend themselves to a small plot set readily. The designs that are good for field scale, well, trying to get each treatment represented in each zone, however you want to define zones. Randy, it's a kind of nebulous idea, isn't it? May necessitate repeating the treatment, replicating the treatment in the field to get ample data from each treatment zone area. Again, I want to be non-intrusive to the farming operation. And as an analyst who doesn't spend a lot of time out on farms, I want it to be easily conveyed. I want the farmer or the field scientist to be able to communicate with me and vice versa about what's going on in this experiment. That means simpler the better. Elaborate designs usually do not get analyzed properly. Provides reliable results is a characteristics of a good design. And as always, if you ever hear me speaking, I always like to talk about the output is a recommendation. In precision ag, too many times we're accused of making maps. And we've all printed maps, but I want to make sure that our output is a recommendation, a farm management decision, rather than artwork. Some of the examples we're doing in Arkansas, I think if you were here this morning, Leo talked about the potassium and nitrogen study, a three-year study that was just completed in 2008. We're sort of in the middle of a seeding rate study in cotton. Both of these were for 3 years and at three different farmers' locations. The same farmer participated in each of the 3 years at field scales. How do we analyze field scale data? How do you analyze field scale data? It's been sort of an evolution since precision ag has been commercialized. Early on, we would stare at maps, we'd stare at dots. Then we moved into more quantitative measures, ANOVA analyses, ordinary least square regression. Today, many people are using spatial statistical methods to appropriately account for the spatial effects in the data. Early on, eyeballing or staring at the map was the most common, but yet it's not sufficient. And if you were in the workshop on Tuesday, one of the things we mentioned was the human mind and human eye together are very good at picking out patterns, even if that pattern does not exist. Okay, is this a good thing? Depends on what you're doing. If you're trying to analyze yield monitor data by staring at it, it's not a good thing. I always like to show this, and you know, since you guys put me on immediately after lunch on the last day, I thought this would be an appropriate image to show right after we had lunch. The question is, do you see black dots? Are there black dots really on this image? There are no black dots in reality, but in your mind, you see black dots. Do you see anything in this one? I'll give you a hint. It is animated. And if you stare at the crosshair long enough, you'll see something different. And many of you will be seeing different things. The person next to you may see something totally different than what you're seeing. The point is, your mind and your eye together will play tricks on you. The next image is not animated. It's a still image, but yet you're seeing motion. Your mind and your eye are playing tricks on you. Analogous arguments can be made why non-spatial statistics may also lead to invalid conclusions when the data is spatially variable. Randy loves it when I talk about this. He calls it fabrication, I call it simulation. I've simulated a lot of data. And since I'm a methods person, I'm not looking for a result to make use and applied everyday farm life. My results are for researchers to take and make better recommendations for applied practical aspects. I'm going to show you two charts. This one, lambda equals zero, means there's no spatial correlation. All the observations are independent. And this is what we're looking for with small plot research. That's when we have small plot research, so we can have more control and make sure that our observations are independent. Mean square error, if you're not a quant jock, you can think of that as a combination of bias and variance. The higher the number, the more likely you're going to come to a wrong conclusion. On the x-axis are five different statistical analysis procedures. The first one is OLS. You can think of this as ANOVA analysis. And the last four are different types of spatial statistical methods. And you'll see 1 block, 2 blocks, 4 blocks, and 8 blocks. Well, the 1 block can be considered a split field, non-replicated split field design. And whereas 8 blocks in a simulation can be thought of as an infinite number of replications. If we replicate, we may be at 2, maybe 4 if it's really elaborate design in the field. In this case, when there's no spatial correlation, everything's independent, as witnessed by this checkerboard-looking square. All the observations are independent. It doesn't matter which we use. We can use 1 block or 8 blocks or ANOVA or spatial statistics. It doesn't really matter. But when we look at spatial correlation is very strong of 0.9. This is kind of what we expect to see in agricultural fields. Unreplicated analysis, the 1 block, has very high mean squared error, especially for the ANOVA analysis of the OLS. And remember, the 1 block can be thought of as a split field, and 8 blocks is a unreal number of replications. It's unattainable. One of the results is that if we're going to use spatial analysis, we can actually reduce our replications usually by 1 and make just as good or better inference than if we had used improper statistics with more replications. So the point to all this is valid results are attainable from field scale on farm research. If, now this if is capitalized and it's bold, that's a big, big if. If the data is analyzed properly, meaning with appropriate spatial statistical methods. Does this mean that we can go out and do field scale research, analyze it with aspatial techniques, and be okay? We have to use the spatial analysis techniques, or otherwise we could be leading to the wrong conclusions. Spatial correlation must be addressed, preferably by explicitly modeling the spatial effects in a model. One of the conclusions I came to from my research we didn't discuss is that some experimental designs can actually induce spatial effects upon the data. I want to thank the folks at University of Arkansas, the supercomputer folks, basically, who allowed me to use the supercomputer to crunch numbers for days on end in my simulations. They've got funding from the National Science Foundation and Cotton Incorporated, as well as USDA Sustainable Ag for funding my research and the Arkansas State Support Committee. And that's all I have. If there's any questions, by the way, I'm fixing to go get on a taxi and head back to Arkansas like in about 2 minutes. So if there's any questions, now would be a really good time.
We've got time for questions, sir.
No, Randy. No. Put your hand down.
That data that you made up. So if you're going to use just an ANOVA, then I mean, certainly split the field doesn't allow you to do that. But what, I mean, how many reps?
In these examples, in the simulation when we had 2 and 4, that's probably saying you need 4 to 8 at field scale. Now the question you have a trade-off. Okay, do you want a more elaborate experimental design in a field, or do you want to spend more time on the analysis side after the data has been harvested? So the farmers who are trying to get everything else planted at the same time may opt for a simpler experimental design and have an analyst spend more analysis time in off-season. Whereas you guys in Oklahoma who keep on telling me it's a scale issue may want to make it a more elaborate experimental design and use simpler analysis techniques.
What kind of things are what you're putting out in the field, I guess, whether exactly. It's more elaborate or not? If you're doing a split planter trial, then doing it on 10 acres is no easier than doing it on 20
or 40. You've got a large number of replications. Yes. Yes, sir.
Comments. One, if you ever knew Bill Walker at the University of Illinois, statistician, gave a paper at the agronomy meetings in 1978 on how to lie with statistics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the second comment, something you just said, spending more time analyzing technically in the scientific process, the analysis of your experiment should be a priority. You should know what you're going to analyze for before you ever conduct the experiment. So spending a great deal of time trying to make heads or tails out of it has defeated the scientific process. So I just make that comment to just be careful when you're trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. There might be an elephant there.
I totally agree with you. I think I may have misspoke when I said more analysis time. What I mean by that is using more rigorous spatial statistical analysis that was based on fundamental statistics. That's perfectly correct because I too am from a theory-driven approach. The models I'm going to impose, the functional forms and so forth I'm going to impose upon the data, I know what those are before I do the experiment. And when I say more elaborate, instead of doing a aspatial analysis, we're going to correct for that spatial error term that is in the data. But I completely agree with what you said. Yes?
One question. How do you control environmental variation? An example I'll give is that I own 40 acres, and on that 40 acres, there's five different soil types.
Mm-hmm.
How do you control that variation?
Well, you don't control it. That's when we... Well, if we know there's a homogeneity difference with soil types, we can create binary variables in a data set to allow different intercepts and slopes for each of those. But when we're talking about correcting for spatial effects, well, if you think about regression analysis, where does the unexplained portion of the data go to? Do we have any statisticians there? Engineers? It goes into the error term, right? So the error term has all this noise. Well, when the unexplained portion is caused by something with spatial structure, whether it's soils or weather or anything, that spatial structure gets moved to the error term. Well, what I want to do is correct for that spatial structure that goes into the error term. Regardless of where that those environmental factors are coming from, it goes into the error term, we can still correct for that to correct for our standard errors so our p-values be more accurate.
Depending on the type of variation you're looking for, if it's really small differences, then the only way to really detect small differences is to increase the number of observations and the number of replications. I mean, I think there's a mathematical formula in statistics that shows you that you know, if you're trying to detect really small differences, it takes large numbers of replications. If you want great big differences is all you're looking for, then you get by with 2 or 3 reps or something like that.
Well, if you're looking, yield difference between corn and soybean, then you don't really need analysis. But you're right. But the fact is, with yield monitor data, sometimes our data sets are 30,000 observations or more. Well, if you have enough observations, you'll find differences when there are not. It works both ways. Hey, it's been a pleasure. Hey, y'all have a good rest of the conference. I'm going to go back to Arkansas, and thank you.
Let's give Terry a hand.